Disney turned in a great quarter of streaming service growth, though Hulu Live was suffering from a price increase hangover. The streaming Super Bowl did well, showing strong growth even as TV viewers declined. Listen on to hear more.
Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media joins us. Hey, Colin, how about that game on Sunday night?
It was a great game. Enjoyed it. Actually, I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed the ads as well. Plenty to laugh at. I don't know about you, but the Amazon Alexa ad gave me a big chuckle.
That one was hilarious, and we don't want to steal from our thunder because we are going to talk about Super Bowl streaming, and we'll talk a little about the ads in our second segment on today's podcast. But first up, we are recording here on Thursday afternoon just after the Disney results were announced, and we want to talk about that first, right?
We are going to talk about the Disney results, yes, literally just announced. Pretty good growth, except for one small fly in the ointment, right, Will?
Yeah, one small fly in the ointment, but the big headline is overall very strong growth in direct-to-consumer streaming. Disney Plus now up to 94.9 million subscribers, and that is up about 21.2 million in the fiscal first quarter for Disney. So 21.2 million, that's about a 29% growth during the quarter. And the 29% is about even with the prior quarter's growth, but it's ahead in number of subscribers. So if you look back to the prior quarter, they had gained 16.2 million subscribers for Disney Plus. That accelerated again to 21.2 million subscribers added in the fiscal first quarter. So a very strong quarter for Disney Plus yet again. That 95 million, that's just about a little over a year since they launched. I think they launched in November of 2019. So that's, again, really, really impressive for Disney Plus. ESPN Plus also up. They gained 1.8 million subscribers, now at 12.1. And Hulu SVOD also had a very strong quarter, added 2.9 million subscribers, now up to 35.4. And as you said, the only little fly in the ointment here is that Hulu Live, the virtual pay TV service, actually dropped 100,000 subscribers. So they dropped from 4.1 million to 4 million at the end of the fiscal year 2021, first quarter. But overall, direct-to-consumer subs now at 146.4. That's up 25.8 million for the quarter. And again, you have to give, I know we're like a broken record every quarter we're recording on Disney Plus, but you got to give them credit. They have really grown this business very strongly in the past year, right?
They certainly have. And unfortunately, of course, they've given us no guidance on Disney Plus about where those subscribers are growing. My suspicion is that the majority of growth is international because they launched in a couple of new markets in the last quarter. Listen to this, Will. Year over year growth for Disney Plus is 258%. That's pretty steep. And I know the CEO, Bob Chapek, is forecasting, 260 million? In the next couple of years, next few years. So he's certainly expecting great things. The interesting thing about the live, the small decline, the 2% decline in live subscribers over the last quarter, I'm absolutely sure, a direct result of the $10 increase that they stuck subscribers with in late December. That had to have had a big impact, and I'm sure that that's responsible for a lot of the decline. And I just want to stop and take a look at ESPN Plus for a bit, because ESPN Plus, Will, has really, really done very, very well since it was launched, which I think was back in 2018. I'm pretty sure it was in 2018. And it's really putting pretty consistent growth since then. And they've been doing, I think, some very innovative things which have really helped it grow. So I don't know if people remember, they did a deal with the UFC where UFC, of course, sells pay-per-view fights. And they were doing that sort of on their own platform, and they signed with ESPN Plus to basically do those pay-per-view fights within the ESPN Plus platform. So the deal was that if you're a UFC fan, you have to subscribe first to ESPN Plus for, I think it's like $2.99 a month. I think it's pretty cheap. And then now once you're a subscriber, you can now pay for the privilege to see pay-per-view UFC fights. And that sort of deal really seems to be working out very well for ESPN Plus in continuing to drive growth in the platform. So it gained 17% in the last quarter. It has grown 83% in the last year. And, you know, with this strategy, Will, I got to believe it's continuing. It's going to continue to grow like that. So that's a pretty impressive growth, don't you think?
Yeah, and ESPN Plus revenue per average revenue per paid subscriber stayed about flat in the quarter, also $4.48 per month, just slightly up from $4.44. So that also is good news. You know, should have added at the beginning that the Disney Plus monthly revenue per paid subscriber actually declined pretty significantly in the quarter from $5.56 to $4.03. And Disney said that, that was due to the launch of Disney Plus Hotstar, which we know happened during the quarter as well. And also, Colin, just back on Hulu Live, you know, you mentioned the price increase that flowed through to almost a $16 increase in revenue from per paid subscriber over the prior year. So $59.47 a year ago, now $75.11 this fiscal first quarter. So that $10 price increase flowed through, and I think that they said that there were some other contributors as well. They said that it included higher per subscriber advertising revenue, a lower mix of wholesale subscribers, and an increase in per subscriber premium and feature add-on revenue. So a lot of different things going on there in Hulu Live, but generally speaking, a pretty strong quarter for Hulu Live as well. I'm sorry, for Hulu SVOD, I meant.
Right.
Live is down just a smidge, but revenue per sub was way up. Yeah,
just 100,000 subscribers, and we, you know, that actually is pretty amazing that it didn't decline more. I think because $10 increase, it's now $65 a month. That's a really big increase when you think about it. And it's just amazing to me that more people didn't bail. And I suspect that one of the reasons they didn't is because a lot of people now are coming in to Disney and they're really picking up on this bundle. Now, there weren't any details on how this bundle is doing, this bundle of Disney Plus, ESPN, and Hulu SVOD only is doing. But I gotta believe it's having an impact, particularly in, you know, one of the ads I noted during the Super Bowl, which we'll get to in just a second, was for that Disney bundle, and it does look like a pretty good deal. And I think what it's doing is it's helping Live, because people come in and see that bundle, and then they can upgrade to Live TV and keep Live TV. It's a pretty good alternative to a pay television. A traditional pay TV package. So I have a feeling that this is a pretty attractive offer. And when you include Live, it has a lot of features that I think people liked about their pay television bundle, which is a single bill, easy to manage, you know, and very, very easy to turn off and on when you want it, and actively are encouraging people to do that. I remember when they did their last price increase, Will, they sent us an email and basically said, you know, yeah, $5. It's going up $5. This was the previous increase. And if that's too much for you, then just turn it off and turn it back on again when you want that feature. So that's something that they're really selling into. I suspect that they're probably still doing that, particularly after that $10 increase. And people love that flexibility. It gives them the flexibility to really control their bill with Disney. So there's a lot of reasons why I think live TV has remained resilient, even though they stuck people with a very, very big $10 price increase.
Yeah, and probably worth mentioning that, you know, that nice SVOD increase is, you gotta believe, at least partially due to the bundle, the Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, Hulu SVOD bundle that we actually saw a Super Bowl ad for, right?
That's right. And this has been growing really steadily. I think it stumbled a little bit mid-year. There was a very small increase between Q3 and Q4, which I attribute almost completely, I suspect, was due to the production shutdown of television. Basically, there was no new content from television. And as we know, Hulu relies a lot on TV content for its as it's being one of its big draws. Other than that, it's been growing pretty strongly and consistently, and you know, maybe even accelerating a little in the last few months. So that could be the effect of the bundle.
Yeah, certainly. And so, a great quarter for Disney, obviously. Pretty impressive for them. And I don't know, Colin, if you had anything else you want to talk about on the quarter, or we started just mentioning the Super Bowl ads there. I don't know if you want to talk about Super Bowl streaming now.
Yeah, I think it might be good to talk about the Super Bowl. I'd actually like to say, first of all, the quality was great. I was streaming on two separate devices from CBS Sports, on my phone and on a Chromebook, of all things. And I got to tell you, Will, I was on my Wi-Fi network. Both of those devices were absolutely rock solid. There was absolutely no hesitations or problems. I did see latency. I did see a lag behind the live stream, which I had on my TV. I had an antenna on my roof, and I was watching that off my local CBS affiliate. And the delay was between 7 and 9 seconds on my phone and 16 and 18 seconds on the Chromebook, which I should know is better than we've seen in previous years. So that was quite impressive. And I even went for a walk at halftime and got on my T-Mobile network, and it worked pretty well there with one exception. This is a funny exception. I had a dropout. It froze during the T-Mobile ad during the halftime show.
Oops.
Which I thought was pretty amusing. But it was a very, very good streaming experience. I really enjoyed it, although I was disappointed that there didn't seem to be any targeted advertising inserted in those streams. The ads seemed to be identical to the live broadcast that I was watching as well. Now, audience-wise, everybody probably realizes the audience was down about 10% this year. And one of the things that they tend to do, Will, is they tend to sort of bundle together the virtual MVPDs now with traditional pay TV, cable, satellite, and telco TV. And so when they report the streaming numbers, they report the streaming numbers ex the virtual MVPDs. And I think that's not a really good representation of what's going on with streaming. So I go through the machinations of adding back in the streaming numbers to the number of people that were streaming from CBS Sports and the other digital properties. And when you do that, you go from the reported number, which was 5.7 million viewers who were streaming. That's average minute streaming audience. That's the measure they use there. And when you add back in the virtual MVPDs, that gets you to 9 million. So that represented about almost a 50% increase, 47% increase from last year. So a lot more people were watching streaming. So even though the TV audience declined, the streaming audience got bigger. So that was, I thought, pretty impressive growth this year.
Yeah, impressive growth, and probably no big surprise either, because we've seen some cord cutting happening this year. We've seen more adoption of connected TVs this year. And all signs certainly pointed to an increase in digital. And you know, the game had some dynamics also this year that probably, and the season that suggested that viewing was going to be down overall on TV. But yeah, streaming back up again. And echo your point, I streamed it on, I would be counted among the, in the machinations, as you put it, that you would have done the calculations that you did, because I watched on YouTube TV on my Roku. And as with you, quality was great, had no dropouts, no issues whatsoever. So I was really pleased with the overall experience.
Yeah, funny you mentioned Roku, because Roku, according to Conviva, was the big winner. Conviva said that there were 41% of stream attempts to start watching the Super Bowl came from Roku devices, and Amazon was pretty far back. Amazon Fire TV was pretty far back with 24%, and Apple TV behind that at 12%. And you know, the interesting thing about these numbers, Will, one of the things I've been following very closely is the balance between connected televisions, connected TV devices, or streaming sticks and boxes, as I like to call them, and the use of smart TVs. And smart TVs have actually been doing pretty well, according to Bruce Leishman's last numbers, middle of last year. About the same number of people have a connected smart TV in their home as have a streaming stick or box. So that would sort of suggest that a dominant smart TV player like Samsung would be doing pretty well, and a lot of people would have been using their Samsung TV to stream the game. But it turns out Samsung only got an 8% share of those streaming starts, compared to, you know, Roku, as I said, 41%, and Amazon 24%, Amazon Fire TV 24%. And that's a bit of a mystery to me. It seems to suggest that people may have connected their smart TV, but they end up still going out and getting a streaming stick and box and using that in preference to the smart TV over time. So bit of an odd data point there.
Why would people do that, do you think, Colin? Because they just don't like that smart TV UI?
I think it's probably because one of the Achilles heels of the smart TV manufacturers, Will, is that they really don't maintain their smart TV updates beyond a couple of years. The only one that really does is Roku. And Roku has made a commitment that when you buy a Roku TV, you're going to keep up with Roku updates for longer than 2 years at least. And I think that's their Achilles heel. People can't get the latest version of an app through their Samsung TV or their LG TV. Or they can't get the latest service they want to have. And that actually could be a big factor, because when you think about it, what people are doing now is they're getting more services. So maybe they're getting one or two more niche services, and they just can't get it through their Samsung TV. So what do? They've got to go get a Roku, or they've got to go and get a Fire TV so that they can watch that service. And it only takes one service, doesn't it? Right? If you can't get a critical service, then you are going to go find a box that gives you that and all the others. And so the smart TV just loses out, right? People just stop using that interface and start using an SSB in its stead, a streaming stick and box in its stead. So I think that's the dynamic that's going on here. And this has been going on for a while. I just don't think there's not a great deal of incentive at the moment for the smart TV manufacturers to keep those interfaces up to date. Although there could be a new dynamic that will force them to keep things up to date, and that's the virtual linear channels that all of the smart TV manufacturers, the major ones anyway, are providing through their boxes. And if they are able to grow a decent ad business, then maybe that will motivate them to keep those older boxes, their older smart TVs rather, more up to date, so that they can continue to run, you know, the Samsung linear TV app, which is Samsung TV Plus, I think, and WebOS is, LG's is Channels, and Vizio's is, Watch Free. It'll motivate them to keep those interfaces up to date, and even in the older models. But right now, the incentive is for to not support the TVs beyond 2 years because they want people to buy a new one. So,
that seems like a big missed opportunity for them, though, doesn't it?
I really agree. I think that they should work harder to keep those TVs up to date. But I do. I mean, I certainly understand the motivations why they want people to get to buy new TVs. Although I got to tell you, the margins on TVs are wafer thin these days, so they're not making that much money from their TV business. So I guess we should keep our fingers crossed that they're able to build a better business with advertising through those virtual linear apps that they have running on the smart TV, because that will motivate them to keep things up to date.
Yep. All right, well, I think we've digressed a bit from Super Bowl streaming and from Disney Plus, but we covered a lot of ground as usual. So, Colin, good chatting with you. Good conversation.
Yeah, and you as always, Will, enjoy the chat.
And thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of our Video News End Screen Media Podcast. And we will catch all of you again next week.